Headlines, global highlights for Saturday, the first day in the month of May 2010. Lucette King has got a special guest this morning. Let me say good morning to Lucette and good morning to Wilfred. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'm here in the UK.
Right. And as part of our discussion on the British parliamentary and local authorities elections, which is due next Thursday, May 6th, and we're looking at how the Caribbean British feature in these elections, we are about to have a chat with Wilfred Emmanuel Jones, who was born in Clarendon, Jamaica, and he moved to Birmingham, England when he was about 4 years old. He's now a very successful British black farmer and conservative parliamentary candidate for the constituency of Chippenham in Wiltshire. In St. Vincent, we might say Wiltshire, but there it's Wiltshire. A market town historically, but now a consumer town of 35,000 people or so. And this town is located some 96 miles west of London and is traditionally a Liberal Democrat seat. Wilfred, welcome to Global Highlights.
Oh, welcome. It's nice to be on your program.
And I'm so grateful that you're taking some time out of the last few days that's left. Now, Wilfred, you have a fairly glitzy background, if you don't mind me saying that. But let's talk about your position as an acclaimed farmer and businessman. Mm-hmm. You produce a range of food products.
That's right,
which
yes.
include your award-winning gluten-free sausages, bacon, and chicken. Mm-hmm. And these are available in selected supermarkets. Mm-hmm. You founded The Black Farmer, which is a featured series on Channel 4 TV. Tell your audience what life is like for you as a black farmer in the UK, and especially with all this fame in a white, liberal, democrat part of the country. Let's hear what you got to tell us.
Well, I was, as you said earlier on, I was born in Clarendon, Jamaica, and my parents came to this country in the 50s, and they went to where the work was, and that, all too often that meant the bigger cities. So I was brought up in Birmingham. In fact, I'm from a family of 11, and 11 of us lived in one of these two-down terrace houses. So you can imagine it was pretty cramped, and we were really, really poor. Now, my father had an allotment, and he obviously had this allotment so he could subsidize the family income by growing vegetables, and it was my job as the oldest boy to look after this allotment. And in a sense, this allotment really became my oasis from the misery that I was surrounded in, because the part of Birmingham that I was brought up in, it's a place called Small Heath, is one of those classic inner-city ghettos where there isn't much opportunity or much hope. And so I used to love being on this allotment. And I can remember at the age of 11 that I made myself a promise that one day I would like to own my own farm. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but it was a promise that I'd lodged in the back of my mind, and everything that I subsequently did was to try and get in a position to buy this farm. It took me some 40 years from the time I had that dream to actually achieving it, but one of the things I always like to say to people, the most important thing in life is to make sure you have a dream. And what was quite fascinating was that when I was able to buy a farm, I then realized that actually there are no black people at all who are in farming, let alone in the rural community. And I've always been quite interested in sausages and all types of food, because in fact I spent most of my career working in food, that I decided that I would like to launch my own food brand and major on sausages. And I spent a lot of money researching this. And as ever, it always then comes down to a brand name. What are you going to call this product? And I was scratching my head for several months thinking, what am I going to call my sausage brands? And then one day it came to me. All of my next door neighbors used to refer to me as the black farmer. And I thought, well, that is a really good brand name. It has real standouts. And also what it will do is that it has an element of jeopardy about it, because in the UK, people seem to be a bit confused about the language to use when referring to black people. Once you move out of the metropolitan areas, people still refer to people of color as colored, and they find it very, very awkward using the word black. So therefore, to have a brand called the Black Farmer, it's very, very much in their face. And not only is it very much in their face, but it also gets people then thinking and talking really about, well, how many black farmers are there? And get people far more interested in why isn't there enough more black people in rural Britain? And therefore get really interested in this brand. And what I found as I went around the country selling the product, it grabbed a lot of attention. I made sure that I had a really, really good product. And I'm pleased to say that this brand is now 5 years old, and we are the second largest premium sausage brand in the country. So being black has been of great benefit to me, because it's enabled the wider community to buy into the brand, and also to have a debate about ethnic minorities in rural Britain.
Interestingly, there's a story in the United States where even after a settlement of $1.25 billion under the Obama administration for harms suffered as a result of decades-long discrimination in loan programs, black farmers and their families here are suffering. Some have lost their farms, others have been excluded from that same settlement, and even those who are entitled under that settlement have little guarantee that will ever be rewarded. So it seems as if you're doing very well in the United Kingdom and maybe not would not have done so well here. Now, Randy, do you have a question there?
As I was listening to Wilfred, given that background that you gave, what informs your politics? What made you become a conservative? Because most of the black people that I know of are Labour, so what got you into the Conservative Party?
Yeah, I mean, if you had said to me some 15, 20 years ago that I'd be talking to you as a Conservative Party candidate, I would have said you'd be talking nuts. It never, ever crossed my mind that, A, I'd be standing for Parliament, let alone standing for Parliament as a Conservative. And the reason for that is this, is during the 60s and 70s, when there was a bit of a backlash from the host community to ethnic minorities coming into the country, obviously people like my parents were very, very fearful, because it takes a massive amount of courage to leave your country of origin to come to a new country to better your life, only to find that there were certain politicians advocating that you should be sent back home. And you may be aware of that famous Enoch Powell speech, the River of Blood speech, when he felt that there were too many ethnic minorities in this country. And so naturally what then happened was that a lot of black people then really went and supported the Labour Party, because they felt the Labour Party was going to protect their interest. And the political black classes in this country tends to be on the left. And what has been forgotten because of that period in our history is that the people who came to this country were classic entrepreneurs. They had great courage in leaving their country of birth to come here. And entrepreneurialism is classic conservative views. So as I managed to succeed in my life, and life has been pretty tough for me because I left school without any qualifications, I'm dyslexic, and I know what it was like to be on society's margins. But what I also recognize is that my success was down to the fact that many, many kind individuals went out of their way to give me opportunities. And I've always believed that the greatest gift you could give anybody in life is a gift of opportunity. So the opportunities that I was given enabled me to go on and succeed. And therefore, I spent quite a lot of my time trying to give back. I run various scholarship schemes, for example. The one that I'm pretty well known for is that the Black Farmer Scholarship Scheme, where I ask to get people from the cities to actually come down to my farm and to learn about farming and living in rural Britain. And I think what happened since the Labour Party had the black vote is that when you stand back and you look at, well, how have black people advanced in all that time where the Labour Party has had the black vote by rights. And you see that really there hasn't been much advancement at all. I think that what has happened in the UK is that the black voice, which tends to be the voice of the left, have been the ones that have been communicating to the white liberals. The white liberals have felt guilty about what's happened in the past. And therefore, what tends to happen is blacks in this country are either treated as victims or people unable to get to high office or to achieve great things. And what I've always felt is that what we need to do, the second and third generation, is to tap into our parents' spirit, that spirit of entrepreneurialism and enterprise, where they won't let anything get in the way. And I feel that, to a certain extent, the second and third generation have been quite fearful. And part of that fear is what happened during the Enoch Powell days. And I think it's now time for those of us blacks who are on the right to be able to say, look, there is another way. That the role for us in this society is not just to be a victim, but we have a great pedigree, and we should really tap into that, which I think really strongly links with conservative ideals, which actually encourages personal responsibility rather than people thinking that the state is going to look after you, because what tends to happen is that you, as a black person, ends up very, very low on the list of priorities.
It's interesting you ended that your answer like that. And while it would be unfair, if not impossible, for you to focus on the black issues, I'd like to know what your position is on the black agenda if you were to win that seat. Because very recently, Operation Black Vote, I don't know if you know that organization.
Yes, I do, yes.
It hailed as a watershed in British politics, the Caribbean Question Time, which was held with major political parties at Westminster Hall last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. At that event, it was organized by the Jamaican National Building Society with support from the Caribbean Council. Mm-hmm. And there were two shadow chancellors, George Osborne from the Conservatives and Vince Cable from the Liberal Democrats. And there was Harriet Harman from the Labour Party. She gave an unprecedented pitch to convince the black British people why they should support the party. And she boasted their achievement with the first black MP in 1980, Bernie Grant, who appeared in his African outfit, and passing the Equality Act. The Conservative, on the other hand, is still making promises. And the Liberal was apologetic for not addressing the black agenda adequately. So if you were to get in there, based on what you just said and what black people seem to be demanding, what would be your position?
Well, I mean, there is a long way to go to bring about more representation of black people in all the parties. Now, as I said earlier, the Labour Party has had the black vote by right for some 50 years. And I think that if they've had the black vote by right for 50 years, why isn't it we haven't seen more successful black MPs in Parliament? And I think Bernie Grant achieved a hell of a lot when he was voted in as the first black MP. But since then, it's all gone a bit quiet. And I personally think that the Labour Party should be ashamed of its record, considering they've had the black vote for such a long time. That said, the Conservative Party has only recently got their head round to doing a lot more. And you will find that in this election, there is a lot more ethnic minority candidates than in the past. And I recognize that they're far behind, but they're trying to do something. The Liberal Democrats, I think that they should be absolutely ashamed, because if you've been following British politics now, you know, they might be in a position where they could be the kingmakers. But their representation of ethnic minorities in their party is appalling. And I don't see how you could start saying that you are reflecting the wider nation if you've got such a poor representation in your parties. And I think, look, the thing is, one of the things I want to try and achieve in politics is to send out the message that you don't have to be part of the political classes to achieve. The big problem with politics in the past is that you've had to belong to this political club and understand the language and the codes. And obviously people from minority backgrounds are not going to be interested because they know that the rules, the game is stacked up against them. And I like to pitch myself as a bit of a maverick, a bit of an outsider. And if I win, I want that message to go out, especially to black people, that it is possible to get through on your own terms, and that it isn't that difficult, and that you don't need to abide by all these sort of old-fashioned rules. And also, what I want to do is that I want to make sure that black issues are very, very much high on the agenda. Because sometimes what has happened is for those ethnic minorities who have managed to get into parliament, to get on personally, they sometimes forget that they have a wider responsibility to black people, to encourage black people, and also to be remembering that they are pioneers and that they still have to push the black agenda. I just find all too often that some of these ethnic minorities model themselves around what they think you need to be as an MP so they could further their career, which isn't going to help black people at all. That's not going to be what I'm going to do. I want to be an inspiration to people thinking of going into politics, and they know that I've gone into politics on my own terms rather than having to be someone else. And all these events, what will happen, the one you were talking about last week at Westminster Hall, you know, you'll get all the big names who come and they'll talk, and that, you know, I think that the community feel as though they're having direct access to these people with power. But the real test is what happens when whoever wins are in power. How much are we then going to get their attentions? I think what tends to happen is that equality, diversity is always very, very low down the list of everyone's set of priorities. And I would like to see it much higher in the agenda than it has been in the past.
As I listen to you, I'm thinking of you in Wiltshire. What is the makeup of the population there? How many black people there are? Because you might find yourself having some grumbles from your white constituents. How would you deal with that?
Well, the makeup of the people in my constituency, I don't have the accurate figure, but I'll take a guess that it's something like about 90-95% white. And my view is this, is as a black person from society's dustbin heap who has managed to achieve things, I have a wider responsibility towards the people of my color. I really fundamentally believe that, and whatever I achieve and succeed in life is going to help other people. So I'm never going to stop doing that. Now, that said, one of the great privileges is that I was selected some 4 years ago by the association here, and they were very, very courageous in selecting me, because they could have gone for your archetypical white Tory, but they didn't. They went for me knowing that I'm a bit of a maverick and that I'm an own man, and they felt I'd be the best person to represent their interests. And I am glad. I'm glad that I've been chosen to represent a white constituency rather than people thinking that because I'm black, therefore the only place I could stand is an urban setting. As well as my responsibility to people of color, I also have a responsibility to my constituents, and I've also got an interest in rural Britain. Now, I do think it is possible to take care of all those interests, and I don't think that my constituents would have a problem with that.
Right. It's interesting too. I read your 1 minute manifesto, and it actually brought a tear to my eyes when I read, and I'm going to quote you here. My background was devoid of hope and aspiration, but I was fortunate to be given opportunities, allowing me to build up a successful business and create jobs and opportunities for others. I'm not a career politician, but my life's experience of injustice has given me a fire in the belly to help others. And as you seem to have, you know, wrapped that up in what you've told us so far. Mm-hmm. There is one other issue that I'd like you to address. During the last party leaders' TV debate that was held in Birmingham, one woman said something that was very profound. She said, we can't just have offices and shops. And she was actually challenging the leaders about what they intend to do to revive the manufacturing industries. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, I believe that the dismantling of the manufacturing industries occurred under the Conservatives in the late 80s, early 90s. And now we have a situation in Britain where there's an 18-month recession, 1.3 million have lost their jobs, 50,000 have lost their homes. And, you know, how do you intend to be a part of this?
Okay. So I don't know. Well, I'm not the sort of politician that likes to get involved in who did what and whose fault it was, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we obviously are now part of the global economy. And we got to a point where it was ridiculous because it was cheaper to produce things abroad than it was to produce it here. And that in a sense, started the decline of the manufacturing base. I mean, I think it takes a philosopher, really, to argue, well, you know, whether it would have been in Britain's interest to still have maintained their manufacturing base rather than allowing things to be made abroad. That argument has to be had by others. But I think that the sort of Britain that I would like to see is that we need to start bringing back a pride in being British. And part of that pride is recognizing there are certain things that we can't do, but the things that we can do well. So an example of that is that I'm in farming. Now, if you go up and down the country, you'll see quite a lot of continental breeds. And what I mean by continental breeds, continental breeds in cattle, in beef cattle, that somewhere, you know, some 40, 50 years ago, they worked out that actually if you rear cattle from France and Italy and you mix those, you'd get higher yields. And so what farmers have subsequently done is that they've gone down that route. Now, some 40, 50 years on, what we're now discovering is that it's much cheaper for farmers in other countries to rear those animals than it is for us. So I would say to farmers, it's a mistake to try and compete with countries that could actually produce those things cheaper. And what we need to start doing is that we need to tap into our specialism. And what I mean by that is, the only place in the world that can make champagne is a little place in France called Champagne. The name is protected, and nowhere else in the world could they make champagne. The same thing could be said for Parmesan cheese. Parmesan cheese, which is famous around the world, nowhere else could it be made but there. And I would like to see this country start to tap into their specialism. And I think it's not only good advice for this country, but it's also good advice for countries in the Caribbean, is that what we need to do is recognize that we have certain specialities, is to protect those specialities. And I think that you could build a pride in that, and not sort of just going down the route of the cheapest products. So one of the things we're going to have to do in this country is to rediscover our entrepreneurialism, because the state has become far too big that too many jobs are provided by the state and this country can no longer afford it. And what we need to do is that we need to encourage people to go out and do it themselves, to innovate, and to feel that by doing that, that they're going to have government support. And when they go out and innovate, is to look at what is great about this country and to specialize in producing things which could only be done in this country and has that unique British edge about it. So it is a difficult time here in the UK, but also it's a time of great opportunity. It is a time of hope, and it just means that we need to go through a cultural change. We need to view the world differently than we have done for the last 13 years.
For those of us who may be joining us, we're talking with Wilfred Emmanuel Jones, a black farmer, Conservative parliamentary candidate in the British elections. Wilfred, we seem to have gone past the stage in Britain when in 1990 a black barrister, John Taylor, who is now a member in the House of Lords, he lost an election in a very safe Tory seat in Cheltenham. Even he at the time dismissed that the idea was anything to do with race, when one of the Tory members actually called him a nigger. As you indicated earlier, there are about 11 black candidates in safe Tory seats. What are your chances winning in Wiltshire?
Well, in my seat, it's very, very close. And it all depends what is happening nationally. It's been a bit of a roller coaster since the election was called. And I'm up against a Liberal Democrat candidate. And they've actually had quite a big spike in the recent campaign, which has made it a lot more difficult for me. I would have said that before the Liberal Democrats had this spike, my chances of winning were very, very high. And so it's very, very close. It's too close to call. And I think that everybody has been really surprised by the real Liberal Democrats surge. And it's really a question of seeing whether this surge continues up until polling day or whether it will be on the wane. Going back to sort of John Taylor, one of the things to take into consideration there is that John Taylor, again, was the victim of a reaction to the Conservative Party. Quite a number of prominent MPs also lost their seat at the same time that John Taylor didn't win Cheltenham. One famous person is John Paton, who then went on to be the governor of Hong Kong. He got humiliated in Bath when he was beaten by the Liberal Democrats. And what tends to happen is the Liberal Democrats do well when the country is reacting to something. So in John Taylor's day, it was a reaction against the Conservatives. In this election, it's a reaction against Gordon Brown and people being fed up with MPs over the expenses crisis. So their momentum is based on people fed up with the traditional politicians. And whereas there may have been some members who wouldn't have voted for John Taylor because of the color of his skin, he was also a victim of this massive wave against the Conservatives.
Right. Wilfred, as I indicated, you have an audience of Vincentians. We're called Vincentians, those of us from St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Mm-hmm.
And we live across the globe. Some of us would be listening to you now in either Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland, and even other parts of the world, and could have proxy votes and maybe could influence some people in Wiltshire. What message, what would you like to leave us with this morning?
Well, what I'd like to leave you with this is that one of the problems that we have in British politics is that it's full of a lot of career politicians, people who go to university, enjoy their debating societies, then go on to work for an MP as a researcher, and then from there they then decide to go and stand for Parliament. So their interest in politics is an academic exercise. They have no real experience of life. They don't have that important fire in the belly that I talk about. And I think what we need in politics these days is people have real life experience. Because I've given you an indication of what my background's like, and that never leaves you. It gives you an idea that how tough it is for people. And you want to fight for fairness and some justice. And I would like to be in Parliament so they could have a different perspective. The person that I'm standing up against is a classic career politician. This is his fourth seat that he's been trying to get, and he's only 30 years old. I would like to go up and shake things up, because it's outsiders that bring about change. And if we really want change, it's to give some of these outsiders who have a different view of things, who are not part of the old club, who could really bring about a difference. So if there's any of your listeners who have been interested in what I have to say and they have any influence over people who might be able to vote for me in this constituency, I do ask them to spread the word. It's a very, very close fight here in the Chippenham constituency, and any support I get would be greatly appreciated.
We actually have some young people in the forces who were recruited specially for that. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, yes. I'm sure some of them are listening, because this radio station is very popular, especially on a Saturday morning with, we call him Randy D. His mm-hmm. name is Ferran Dopwell, and it's so good to have you here. Randy, anything?
Well, I noticed that the polls said too close to call. A couple more days to go. Gordon Brown calling a lady a stupid bigot. That's the feel? What's the feel on the ground? Besides in your constituency, have you got a feel that this is a hung parliament?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is this, is that the Labour vote is collapsing. And I just think what is fascinating about politics is that people don't learn. I think the Labour Party had an opportunity many months ago to get rid of Gordon Brown, and they would have probably found they would have been doing a lot better in the polls, because the public would have seen a freshness about the party. But I'm afraid that I think they're going to get beaten, and beaten badly, and it's going to take the Labour Party a long time to recover. We in the Conservative Party have been through that pain, and it's only now, some 13 years later, that we might be in a position to get back in government. So you know, once things start falling apart, it takes a long time to recover. The mood on the ground is that people want to change. They do feel let down by politicians. There is a lot of anger out there, and as I was saying earlier on, that's why the Liberal Democrats have been doing relatively well. But there is still a large number of people who are undecided. Normally, in politics, people have an idea who they're going to vote for way before polling. That isn't the case this time. And I think now that the Labour Party vote is collapsing, it's a question for people to decide, well, what sort of change do they want? Because both the Conservative and the Liberal Democrat Party are now talking about the change agenda. And whereas in the past, the Liberal Democrats haven't had as much they haven't had many people digging into what they're about. The people are now starting to dig into what they're about and giving them much better scrutiny than's happened in the past. And that what we have to do in the Conservative Party is that we need to give people the confidence that to trust us in doing the right thing. And it isn't an election where you're going to be voting on all the hopes and dreams. It's about, listen, we've got to sort this mess out. And the thing I like to leave people with when I go knocking on the doors and I'm canvassing, and I say, look, the situation that we have in this country, it's a bit like this. We've just had a dinner party. Just imagine that you've just had a dinner party, just a great party where you had family and friends round. It's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and the last person has just gone home. And then you have that moment, you have that very, very important moment when you have to make a decision. Do you do the washing up before you go to bed, or do you leave it until the morning? And that's exactly the situation that this country faces. We in the Conservative Party are saying, well, look, we know we're a bit tired, but let's start doing the washing up now, because we know that we leave it till morning, that it's going to be worse, because everything would have stuck together and it's going to eat into the day. Whereas the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats are talking about washing up tomorrow. We have to start washing up today.
Randy?
Let me thank you, man. Wilfred, let me thank you, and let me wish you lots and lots of success. I know it's going to be a rough couple more hours to go, but if you're digging in, if you've made it so far as the Black Farmer, I expect the next time we speak, you'll be representing your area.
Thank you very much, Randy.
It's a delight. Thank you, Randy, and thank you very much, Wilfred. Hope to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for talking to you.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks, Lizette. That's Global Highlights for the first day in the month of May 2010. Lucette gave us an update on Haiti and a major interview with a conservative. He's called the Black Farmer. He's got a trade name, the Black Farmer, sausages and stuff like that.